Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Adam Drummond. Adam is from Cork and his life was turned upside down in 2020 when he had a fall from a height and got paralysed from the waist down. Adam is from the north side of Cork City and you might have seen him and his family recently on the hit RTE show DIY SOS. Sit back and enjoy the show. Yeah. Adam, come here. Thanks a million for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good, Ian, mate. Thanks for having me.
How's life? All good?
All good, no. I just a bit small, but under the weather, but I said I couldn't miss this, though.
Thanks a million. Thanks for your time.
Yeah.
I like to bring on my guests, I suppose, back to the start growing up as a child. You're from Cork, and do you want to just paint a picture for the guests what it was like growing up?
I'm from the north side of Cork City, and I'm kind of came into a basketball family in a way, even though my mom and dad don't play. Kind of my cousins and things like that played. I'm a 2 minute walk, not even a throwing star away from Neptune Basketball Club, Neptune Stadium. So yeah, I was kind of a no brainer for me really to be to try out the basketball. Luckily, I had success in it, winning multiple national titles growing up with Neptune, and then I got a scholarship to play basketball in the US. Luckily, I was there for 2.5 years and came back just before COVID.
No, that was the basketball you were just telling me about there. You were obviously massive into basketball as a child, were you?
Yeah, hugely. Hugely. Just trying to get over as much Neptune kind of senior games as I could growing up. And then, the basketball in America was kind of on after midnight because they're 5 hours behind. So it was kind of only summertime, like really watch the NBA and things like that because my mum wouldn't let me up that late. But absolutely obsessed. I'm a huge football and soccer fan as well. Growing up, like a big Liverpool fan, probably watched more soccer than basketball growing up. But definitely had in playing wise, definitely more interest in the basketball.
Do you have any brothers or sisters? Are you an only child?
No, one older brother and one older sister. My brother's 36 and my sister's 29. So there's a bit of a gap between us. I'm 24 now, just turned 24. So I'm pushing on a small bit now as well.
You're pushing, you're catching up to them. I heard you in an interview before there, you were just talking about Neptune there in the basketball. Would that be, I suppose, kind of the mecca of Irish basketball?
I'm a bit biased, but yeah, I'd say so. I'd say Neptune Stadium definitely is the mecca. I think anyone who says otherwise is bluffing, like, but I'd say Neptune basketball as a whole, I'd say success-wise, senior level anyway over the last 15-20 years hasn't really matched up to the 80s or 90s, but I think there's still, when a team walks into Neptune Stadium, there's a bit of a kind of a dark cloud over them, but hopefully in the next couple of years we might be able to turn a corner with some fellas kind of returning from America and things like that from scholarships, so hopefully they choose to come back to Neptune and hopefully we can see the glory days again.
And like you said there about going over to America, was it Pennsylvania you went over to, was it?
Yeah, that's where I originally went to Connecticut. I was in a prep school there, kind of boarding school for a year, and then I went to play college basketball in Pennsylvania. So kind of two different places. Connecticut was a bit very close to New York City, and then where I was in central Pennsylvania was kind of the middle of nowhere. But like, I was lucky enough to get two totally different experiences and mean totally different types of people. So I don't regret one bit of it, and I'm thankful for all of it.
Did you ever go way down into New York on your day off?
I did once or twice now, right? I got a train to New York City. Bit different now than kind of getting the bus into Cork City. Like, it's a small bit bigger. But unbelievable, like all the experiences I took. I tried to take as much as I could away from me and bring it back home. So definitely one or two weekends in New York.
It's I suppose when you were over there by yourself at the start, did you think, obviously you were still young, did you think that you have to, I suppose, kind of grow up a bit faster and get more mature than others, when you're over in such a mecca of the world?
I guess so. Like, I think me going over there not knowing anyone really was probably a blessing in disguise. I think you do have to kind of grow up quickly. But like, at the same time, you go over there and you have enough support. Well, it's not the support that you have by your mom and dad or your family, but it's a different type of support where you're independent, but you have that to fall back on as well. So I was thankful for like those kind of places I was, because you know they did give me that support.
And how did it work over there then, say with school-wise? Was it kind of like a boarding school, or how was it?
Yeah, so first year was a boarding school, so like you're living on campus, like, and you know, I actually had classes Monday to Saturday, which, believe it or not, that was a bit of a culture shock, now, to be honest with you, to take that I had to go to school on Saturday. But no, like, you literally roll out of bed and 30 seconds away was your first class, like, you know, your classroom. So, and then college wasn't too much different. It was a bigger campus, but again, you were living on campus. Like it would be like going to UL or anything like that. Everything was on campus. You didn't really need to leave too much. So we had school was taken very seriously over there. You know, if you failed, if you didn't have the grades, you weren't playing. Like that was the contract you signed. Like, you know, you had to take care of business in the morning to play at night. So when I kind of came back to college, it kind of helped, because I tried to keep the same kind of standards, I guess.
It's not like getting a J1 so over to New York.
No, you have to take care of business, and then they take care of you, kind of thing.
Was there any Irish over there as well from Ireland playing basketball, or was it people from all over the world?
All over the world. It's definitely gotten a lot bigger now recently in the last couple of years. I think when I went over, I would have been, I'd say there would have only been about 10 or 15 young fellas, I'd say since the beginning, in the last 15 years. And then since I went to 2018, I think currently there's about 20 or 25 currently there now. So there's been a big jump in the amount of players that have gone over there.
It's expanding. So how did it work? Did they, I suppose, it's like soccer and stuff. Did scouts come over and look at you, or how did you kind of get recruited?
I think I was on my first Irish team under 16 when I was 13. So it began by that, and then my coach, Wayne Paul Keller, brought me over to a camp in America, and then it kind of began properly. Then I guess. Now it's very easy on social media to be seen, but in 2014, 2015 there wasn't as much presence, and to be able to, you know, kind of get yourself recruited on social media. So I guess it was when I went over there in person, there was a couple of coaches saw me, and then they started talking to other coaches, and then it kind of went from there. Then
you mentioned there your coach. I was listening there a few weeks ago. You're on a podcast on YouTube. I was reading you mentioned him, Paul Kelleher, a lot, your coach. Did you have a good enough relationship with him, did you?
Brilliant, yeah. He's one of my great friends, to be honest with you. He's coached me since I was 12, and I've had him on Irish teams and things like that. And you know, the amount of training he did with me outside team training, I could never repay him, to be honest with you. And he never asked for anything. He never asked. All he asked was, you know, for me to give my best and enjoy it. And that's the kind of person he is, and he's still coaching now at underage teams, and he'll probably look to get back to, I'd say, play at the senior level as well in Ireland, the Super League. I'd hope he'd kind of try to get a job there, because I think there'd be a lot of clubs around the country that would love to have him.
Very good. You were saying there at the start as well, like, basketball was, I suppose, obviously now and before your accident, we'll move on to in a sec, it was your first love. When did you make the decision between, say, soccer and basketball, or were you playing hurling? When did you kind of say, right, basketball is a sport that I'm going to go down that road?
I think I just turned 15, and I went from like 5'11 to 6'4, it was kind of an easy decision at that point. I didn't have coordination anymore, my legs and my feet, to be playing soccer, so I was like, you know what, basketball is the upper body, so I kind of used the height then. I played, you know, I learned to be a small player, a point guard, but then I was a tall point guard being 6'4", so I kind of used that as my advantage. So I think it was a bit of a no-brainer, to be honest with you, and then being so close to Neptune, you couldn't really get me out of the place.
What was it like, I suppose, down, were you kind of, how far away from you are you from the city in Cork? Was sports a very big part of where you were living around that area?
Huge, yeah. Like, it's the north of Cork City, so, like, you know, it's definitely probably considered a disadvantaged area, you know, with crime and things like that. But I think people are very proud of their sport here, and like, you know, the sports people that come out here, like Roy Keane and people like that, were very, very proud to say that we're from the north side of Cork City. So yeah, sport was huge. I went to the Mon AG, and that's a huge hurling school with various hearty titles, like. But you know, as a basketball player, it's definitely, I definitely could say I probably helped, you know, bring up the titles and things like that in the school. And even since I've left, there's been many more national titles come out of there. Yeah, definitely, it's definitely, the North Side is definitely a proud place when it comes to sport.
Like you said, there's a bit of crime and stuff. Do you think that I suppose sports and basketball in one way, did it keep you, I suppose, away from that, or did?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a combination of sports and just my parents and things like that. I think luckily, in a way, I was very lucky, because there's lots of young fellas and women that out there that don't have either of those. To mind both of them. But I think, you know, I think sport heals a lot of things, and it keeps young people away from, you know, having to make those decisions. Sometimes they don't have a decision to get involved in crime and things like that. So I think, you know, keep them inside a basketball hall or a GA field, but can definitely reduce those kind of things.
Were you living in an estate, or was it kind of a house out in its?
No, it's estate. It's not. There's eight houses in my estate now. Luckily enough, I'm in a nice place. But you know, it's a stone's throw away from places that are a lot different. So, not luckily now. As you see in the show, it's a nice little estate, small estate. So, and the houses after getting a lot nicer as well. So, well, I'm very thankful for that.
No. We're saying there about growing up in the estate. I was the same. I grew up in a council estate as well. Do you think that, and I said it to a lot of people that come on the show, do you think that when you're living in a state, you kind of grow up and you become more streetwise, and it kind of helps you in life?
Yeah, I think so. I'd agree with that, definitely. I guess, you know, being out with friends and things like that when you're younger definitely helps. And I think you're kind of exposed to kind of different more crime and things like that, but not so much really. But I think later in life it kind of helps you make decisions, and you know, help you, you know, try and tell other children. And like I coach underage teams in my club, like, you know, and try, if they come up to me with a problem, I'm able to answer it to a certain extent, you know.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with Cork man Adam Drummond. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show. Or you can now get this interview, as well as all the shows I've done so far, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. We'll move on now to your accident, and a lot of people would have heard about it and about the DIY SOS that was on there recently. We'll move on to that after. Do you want to bring me back to, I suppose, the day of your accident, and just paint a picture for the listeners of what that was like?
Yeah, so May 20th, 2021, I just turned 22, and I fell from a height and landed on my bum. And I was immediately diagnosed with, T10 paralyzation. And for people who, you know, wouldn't know that, it's a spinal cord injury, and your spinal cord is basically nerves that are connect your brain to the rest of your body. And so basically T10 is thoracic 10 level of the thoracic on your back, and that's basically roughly the kind of hips below, so I've no feeling or movement in those areas. Definitely a tough life-changing incident, but luckily I had the people around me, and most importantly the kind of the strong mindset and strong wills to get through it. And I'm, you know, I don't think it'll ever it'll ever end, but I'm definitely getting through it as best as I can.
Very good. And like you said there, Jurassic 10, it's kind of low down, so it's kind of the waist under. Yeah. I suppose in one way you were lucky, because when I had mine, I kind of landed more on my neck. You were lucky that it was on your bum, and obviously the fact that it was from a height, if you would land it any other way, like, it was obviously going to be way worse, was it?
I don't think we'd be having a conversation here today. I think I'd be dead, to be honest with you. I think it's as simple as that. And when we have our days, and as you know, like, when we get to our lowest, I think that's when I have to kind of grab myself and say it could be a lot worse. The injury could be worse, or I mightn't be there. So I'm just thankful that I am here. And this is the injury I was left with. Not probably the injury I would prefer to be able to walk away from it, obviously, but, you know, it could be worse, and I'm thankful for it.
Absolutely, because there's always, and I always say, there's always going to be someone in a worse off decision from you. Was this when you went to the hospital then, did they ring your parents from there, or did your parents, were they with you when it happened?
No, they weren't with me. They rang my parents, and my mom, you know, tells the story in the show that, like, you know, she's walking down the corridor and the doctors were waiting in the family room, and she didn't want to go in, because she said, you know, there's either two things: he's dead, or he's really, really, really injured. And it was obviously one of them. And she, you know, she tells me that it was the option that she would have wanted. Obviously, she didn't want me to be gone. But, you know, I'm still here, and which is probably the most important thing. But my parents were called, and obviously I can only imagine what that feeling is like, getting that call from the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a call that no parent deserves to get. Is you just mentioned there what type of injury you had. Was it complete or incomplete spinal injury? And do you want to explain there for the listeners the difference?
Yeah, so mine's complete injury, and the difference between complete and incomplete. So complete is basically there's no signals coming from your brain, like, through your spinal cord. And then incomplete is that there's kind of severe, kind of like small little signals come through, and that can range from like 1% to 99%, you know, or 100%. And then, you know, with incomplete, there's like a lot more of a chance for you to recover, or it gives you some sort of a chance to recover. Complete is basically you've no chance for recovering.
Absolutely. How important do you think, and I always say it's a massive part of my story, how important do you think that, I suppose, community and friends and stuff are, how important are they that are around you after your injury?
Everything, to be honest with you. I think it's so, so important. I'm so thankful. I probably don't thank them enough, to be honest with you, but I think, you know, I've had conversations with them, and the only thing they always say is that you would have been there if it was the other way around for me. And I think that's probably the best compliment I can be given, or my family. Just, you know, knowing that, you know, if they ever need something or anything like that, like, they'll be able to lean on me, whether I'm, you know, in a wheelchair or not. I'll try to make myself available for them as well. But the community, especially in the north side, and my family and my friends and things like that, it's a tight-knit group. And, you know, when someone goes down, you know, hundreds, and in my case thousands, picked me up and got me home, you know, so it's very, very important.
Do you think you'd be this positive and kind of happy, as in, like, do you think that you'd be able to talk about your story in interviews and stuff if it wasn't for the support from others?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I think when it immediately happened, I think just seeing the reaction and things like that kind of, you know, made me motivated to kind of, you know, go tell my story. And I think when a lot of people kind of look at me, and if I'm, you know, negative and I'm doom and gloom all the time, I think it would affect them just as much as it affects me. So I try to be positive, not so much putting on a smile, really, to be honest with you. I think it's a genuine smile that I try to have, because I am happy that I'm here, and that, you know, my life is the exact same, but I just can't walk, really. I don't think much has changed.
And I think that a lot of people, I think some people, when they see someone in a wheelchair, like I always say, it's not who you are, it's just who you get around, isn't it?
Exactly. No, 100%. That's great. No, I've never heard them words, but I couldn't agree more.
It is, absolutely. When you did fall, did you know straight away, did your body kind of go lifeless straight away? You knew what was that feeling like?
I guess, but to be honest with you, I think about the week to 10 days, I can't remember much. I remember little snippets. I remember moments, but I think you're just kind of in survival mode. I think it didn't really hit me till about, I think I was about 2 months removed. I was up in the Dunleary in NRH. And it just kind of got a bit slow for me. I think everything was new. I think there was, like, you know, it was surgery, then it was recovery, physio, and then things started to get a bit repetitive. And I think it was that moment then I was like, geez, this is the rest of my life here now. Like, so that was kind of a tough moment there for me. But I think probably up until 2 months, it took for then for me for it to kind of hit me then.
Yeah, because I know I'm the same. First, I suppose, 2 weeks when I had mine as well, you know, it's more, did yours, like mine did anyway, did yours feel like it was just like endless MRIs and x-rays and scans and nurses and doctors and all around?
Completely. From learning from other people's stories, mine was a bit more straightforward. It was you 3 breaks in your back, went up to the mat or got surgery, back down to the CUH, and then I started physio, and then I went up to Dunleary. So mine was kind of like, yeah, I guess 2 days before was scans, and then I just got the surgery, back down to CUH, and then a few more scans for 2 weeks, and then that was it then. And it was kind of the road to recovery. And well, when you say recovery, I guess it's more learning to live with a disability and being a spinal cord rather than recovering. I think people kind of get those mixed up. I guess it's learning to live with your body, your new body. Because for complete spinal cord injuries, there's not really much recovery, you know.
And I think that a lot of people text me with like stories, you know. I suppose people see stories in America, like the heading "Paralyzed Man Walks Again," and they'd send it to me, but they don't realize the difference between the complete and incomplete. Do you think that a lot of people, like before my accident, and I don't know about yours, did you know the difference? Because I didn't.
No, geez, I wouldn't have had a clue, no clue at all, to be honest with you. And you know, I wouldn't be like, when I do correct people, it's not in a negative way. It's just, you know, trying to educate people. And like my friends say it all the time, they wouldn't know anything, but they'd be walking on the street and they'd be like, geez, like, oh, that street, that curb there now is a disgrace. Like, you wouldn't be able to get up on it, like, you know. And there are some things I'd miss, like, but it's kind of funny in a way, though, to see people around you kind of being more observant of those kind of things. But yeah, I guess the general public wouldn't know about spinal cords. They wouldn't know the types of spinal cord injuries and the levels and things like that.
And it's only when you're in the situation, like you said, the curbs and stuff are the things that you realise, even for people, say, pushing a buggy or something, the curbs and the lips and the roads and stuff. You mentioned your friends there. Were they, because I'm sure they were your friends, a massive support for you when you were in hospital and getting ready to come home?
Yeah, I think so. They were absolutely amazing. And I think I said before that the hardest part of my injury and things like that, the whole process, was coming home. I was scared, very scared to come home, because I guess when you get into hospital after a while, it's a bit of a safe haven, and it's a comfort zone. You kind of go home and you're like, geez, I have to go out in public now, and the last time they saw me, I was walking out and about, now I'm stuck in a wheelchair, like, you know. And I guess it's a bit of you kind of get a bit of a social anxiety. But then, you know, it's those people, like your friends, that go like, will you cop on, like, you know, you're just being a dope now or whatever, like, you know, nobody cares, like, you know. People just want to look out for you and things like that.
Now we're going to go for a quick ad break. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry. Lots more to come. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to the show. I'm here today with Cork man Adam Drummond. Adam has a very inspiring story, and if you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website, in the podcast section, or on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Can you remember your first time going out in public? Because I remember mine was after about 4 months in the the matter, and we went up to a hotel for dinner, and I felt like I was a child inside in a buggy. That was the best way I could. Did you, what did you feel like your very first time going out in public?
I think mine was, I was actually up in Dunleary at the time, and I actually went to one of my friends, got us tickets for the All-Ireland semi-final. It was the Cork and Kilkenny semi-final, so that was actually my first time. I was kind of looking forward to it, and then when it came to the day, I was just like, I don't want to go. Like, I was like, I didn't take into account that I was going to see people, you know, from Cork who were going to be up a Croke. Or and it was definitely a huge step, you know, from my eyes. I was just like, I'm going to watch Hurling match, that's great. Like, but then when it came to the day, it was definitely tough. Like, and you had people pushing around and things like that. But luckily now, I don't let anyone push me or anything like that. And that's the one thing I'm kind of territorial about, is that I don't like to be kind of pushed around, because one, it does feel like that, you know, it feels like you are a child in a buggy, and that's interesting. You said that
it is 100% independence is the key thing, and I try to do as much as I can as well. How did you find, I suppose, after it, and I'm sure you're still going through it, the kind of, I suppose, accepting the injury and coming to terms with it? Are you still in denial, or did it take you long for you to say, right, this is my life, and just start a new chapter?
I guess it's, I'm like 99%. I guess when you fully accept it, it's almost like you're giving up in a way. I think you, like, there has to be a small bit of hope that, like, you know, there would be, like, with science down the air, whether it's 10 years down the line or 40 years down the line, you have to have a bit of hope. But I guess I'm about 99% of the way there, and I guess it's choice by not being 100%, because, like, as I said, when you accept it, like, in a way, you're kind of giving up. But I'm definitely in a good place. I'm in a place where, you know, almost two years ago when my accident happened, if you told me this is where I am now, I'd be delighted. And I'd be happy out myself. I'm getting there. I guess every day is a step forward. Some days could be a step back. But it's just kind of trying to take it day by day, really.
That's all you can do. Like, and it's obviously going to be hard for ages, but, you know, like you said, taking one step at a time. When you were finished in the matter, like you said there, you were there for a couple of months. 2 months, was it?
I was there for 3 months. Sorry,
3 months. And after your operation, then in the matter and everything, you were obviously up in the spinal unit up there, were you?
Yeah, I was up in the Lily Ward, up in the spinal unit. Yeah,
and off to down to CUH and then to Dunleary. What did you make of your whole experience in Dunleary? They do massive work up there, don't they?
Unbelievable. And I was just there when they just redid it. I think it opened up a couple of months before. So,
were you in the new one?
I was in the new one. Yeah, thankfully. Were you in the old one? Yeah,
I was in the old one. Yeah, I was down in the one further down. Yeah.
And it's, the new one is unbelievable. And I spent a couple of bit of time, you know, getting scans and things in the old one. But just to see the, you know, the advancements they made in the facilities that they have now. It's more for the kind of the physios and the doctors, really, to be able to use their full potential as much as it is ours. Like, because, you know, if they don't have the resources, we're not going to benefit. So Dunleary was absolutely unbelievable. The people up there are even better, to be honest with you, because it's a tough time. You know, you're on a room on your own for 3 months, and they definitely make it easier. And mine was during COVID, you were during COVID, so it was definitely a tough time, but they made it work. You know, they were my family during the week, and then my family were able to visit me on the weekend, so it was more the people up there that made it a lot easier for me.
I completely forgot about that, sure, that was during COVID. When you were there, it was obviously intense rehab and physio and down to the OT and stuff like that. What was, I suppose, when you were down in physio, did you kind of say, right, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to give it 100% every day, or did you find it hard at times to kind of push yourself?
I think for more overall, I kind of tried to play it like a training session or a match. Like I was like, in a way, I always tried to keep telling myself, this is the biggest game of my life. Like, you know, I was like, if I take shortcuts here, I'll regret it in years to come. And you know, there was tough times, but like they're great up there. Like, you know, your physio, your doctors, your nurses, they know when as soon as they walk in the door in the morning, like what kind of mood you're in. So, you know, I think towards the end I kind of struggled because I was anxious to get home, in a way, but I was nervous about it. And then I was kind of, you know, the kind of repetition kind of wore off. Then it was the same thing for 3 months. So I think towards the end I struggled a small bit, but overall, I tried to give it as best as I could.
And it's obviously coming home was a massive step, and for everybody, yeah. it's like coming home into a new world. How was your mental health during the whole thing? Because they obviously offer counselling and stuff up there, and they're yeah. very good that way. Have you been lucky enough with your mental health since that you've kind of been strong minded?
I think so. Yeah. Overall, as I said, like, you know, we all have our bad days, and I think, you know, for both of us, I think if we didn't have bad days, I think there'd be something wrong. You know, I think if we were happy go Larry all the time, I think that there's probably something more dangerous than that. Than having your bad days. And I try to tell myself, you know, you need to embrace the bad days to enjoy the good ones. And I try, at the end of every bad day, I say, look, this isn't going to happen tomorrow. And I try to learn from it, and you know, what did I do good now in the bad day? What did I do bad? What can I do to prevent this the next time? But yeah, overall, I've a lot of people I can lean on as well.
Did you have any for the few? Was nights after, did you have any flashbacks at night? Like I had nightmares for a few weeks. Did you have any flashbacks like that?
Yeah, I guess so. I think that's kind of the toughest part as well. You're kind of trying to get it out of your head, and I struggle with sleep a lot now, to be honest with you. Sometimes trying to fall asleep on it, you know, it kind of brings you back bad memories. But yeah, I definitely agree with that now. Kind of waking up and sweats once or twice now, right? It's tough, but overall not too bad, probably worse than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Lastly, now we'll move on to just a few bits about life. Now you're currently in college at the moment, are you?
Yeah, I'm currently doing finish up my third year now, sports and exercise management in MTU.
How's that going for you, getting around in the wheelchair around college and stuff?
Grand, yeah. It's a lot better than being in UCC, because UCC is kind of on a hill. I'm up in Bishopstown, so it's flattened up. But yeah, look, I started the course before my accident, and I think I got home from hospital in September, and college was starting the week after, so I made the decision. I was like, I'm not wasting any time here now, I'm going to go straight into college. So I made that decision, thankfully, and it was the best decision I probably ever made, because now I'm going into my final year. Not really missing it. I didn't miss any time or modules or anything like that. So I'm very, very grateful I made that decision then.
You're obviously not playing basketball now as you used to, but you're involved in coaching an under 20s, are you?
Yeah, I'm coaching under 20s in Neptune. A bit different. I knew I would be a coach, but I didn't think it would be so soon. But no, it's been a great experience coaching the lads. Difficult at times, you know, physically trying to teach them, but tactically they're very understanding, like, you know, and I think they have the respect for me anyway. But it's been probably a bit of a tough season overall. We're a young team, but you know, we're kind of hopefully starting to build towards next year now. I think we'll be good next year.
It's great to still be involved in it though. Now we're going to go for the last ad break of the show. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
I hope you're all enjoying the show so far, and I'm enjoying talking to Adam myself, because he has a very inspiring story, and it's great to talk to people that I suppose are in the same position as myself, that have a spinal cord injury, and it's great to be able to link up and talk to people like this and to share with all ye, the listeners, exactly what is involved after a spinal cord injury and how life is not over, and there's so much more you can do after your injury. So if you missed the start of the interview and you're just tuning in now, you can get it on the Radio Kerry website or on Spotify after the show. you mentioned earlier in the interview the likes of Roy Keane from that kind of, I suppose, side of the city. He called up to you there a few weeks or months ago, did he?
Yeah, so he was asked to be involved in the DIY SOS build, but he actually came a week after, and he said that, you know, if he came, he didn't like the cameras. He said it was my moment, and he wanted it to be about me. So I think that was very Roy Keane of him. I wouldn't say excuse, but reason as to why he didn't come for the DIY, and he came and he was there for an hour and he had a cup of tea and things like that. And he was just listening to my story and, you know, just saying how proud he is for both of us to be from the north side and what it meant to him. And it's very similar as to how I say it, you know, a tight knit community that's, you know, pick people up when they're down rather than the other way around, you know.
When he was down in Kerry there during the year last year, and he was down for a kind of a charity thing, but he went up to the general hospital in Tralee, up to the oncology ward where people were getting treatment for cancer, and he spent about 2 hours up there chatting to them. Like, he's the kind of person, isn't he, that doesn't, like you said, want the cameras. He likes to do stuff kind of on his own, not look for praise.
Yeah, I know, and I think, you know, he spends enough time on TV, I think, that he just wants to be a person, kind of human experience for people, rather than, you know, cameras following him. He's not on social media, doesn't like any of that. So he just wants to come across genuine. That is what he is. You know, he is a genuine fella.
He is 100%. Before we finish, I just want to mention the DIY SOS on RT. How did? Because I remember when your accident happened, there was a GoFundMe, and it kind of went people donating and stuff.
Yeah.
All coming together. When did the idea of the DIY SOS on RT come about? Did they come to you?
No, so it was actually a Kerry, well, Cork woman, but a Kerry guard, Mary Gardner.
I had her on my show there a few weeks ago.
Real, yeah. So it was actually Mary had a contact in the show.
Legend, isn't she?
Yeah, and jeez, I saw her last week, and I was saying, look, this is this all happened because of Mary.
She's
And she actually contacted the show, I think, within a week or something like that after the accident. But they actually came to see my house, the two producers and the owners of the show, and one of them was like, not a chance, this isn't gonna be possible, and the other one was like, yes, we'll make it work. So thankfully, and they gave it a go, and they got me home. So I guess it started with a Kerry woman.
Kerry woman, we'll take that bit of praise. when I was watching it there, whenever it was aired a few weeks ago, there was a load of people, you know, in their high vis and hard hats and stuff. There was people of all ages. Were they just people from the community, or were they family and friends, or who were they just people rallying together?
No, they were from all over the place. There was 3,000 applied, and I think it was 1,100 were kind of chosen to help, which is an unbelievable number, you know. But like, as you said, there was sort of lads from all over the place, Mullingar and places like that, but mainly Cork, mainly the north side, but people from all over the country, to be honest.
Were you when you came out of hospital, you were living somewhere else for a few months. Were you waiting for this place to be ready?
Yeah, it was a temporary apartment, ground floor apartment, and it was done. It was given to us by the family friend, thankfully, but it was probably the bare minimum of wheelchair accessible. It was very narrow. There wasn't much space. So yeah, it was definitely kind of a tough transition to go from hospital to there. But you know, there was light at the end of the tunnel, really, knowing that we were going to get home eventually.
100%. Like you said there a while ago about the technology and everything, you know, it's getting better and better every day, especially in America. How important do you think that I see you using the exoskeleton is for, I suppose, you know, getting the legs moving and technology like that? How important is it for people with spinal injuries?
I think very important. I think it's whether, you know, you're complete or incomplete, I think it's important for peace of mind, and, you know, it's good for the headspace for you to get up and walk, and whether that's you actually doing it or assisted or things like, anyway, I think it's more important for for headspace, and you know, I guess it's kind of trying to keep your body ready, you know, in case there is something that comes out there, or an opportunity that does happen. So it's trying to kind of retrain your brain and your body to be able to walk again.
It is, and I personally definitely think that in the next 20, 30 years, like there will be something. Do you remain confident enough as well?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I think there's things out there now like epidural stimulation and things like that, that are possibilities that, you know, you might never walk up a step again, but you will take steps again. And I think that people say like, oh, it's a lot of money, it's not worth it, but you know, we're only here once, like, you know, we're going to give ourselves every chance we can, and whether that's one step or 100 steps, they're all gigantic for us, like.
They're absolutely. Last question now before we finish up, because I'm sure you are, but do you see, I suppose, life in a completely different view now? You're obviously probably more grateful for the small things, whether that be itching your leg or, you know, going across the room to get the remote. Do you view life in a totally different light now?
I think I'm just a bit more open-minded, to be honest with you. I think, you know, when you don't have these problems, I think I look back before my accident and like the things I used to get annoyed about, and they're just not important, you know. I just like to focus on the important things, you know, because I was very quickly nearly taken away from my heart. So it's kind of like, you know, trying to live your life to the fullest and, you know, take it day by day, and just trying to stay open-minded, and you know, I've been fortunate enough to meet brilliant people just like right now, like yourself, since my accident, and it's people like that when you don't, you kind of surround yourself with people like yourself, you know, and you're kind of go, look, we're not in this alone. So just trying to stay open-minded and positive, really, definitely, compared to what I was before.
That's it, and that's all you can do. Adam, come here, thanks so much for coming on now, and I appreciate your time and stuff for coming on tonight. And if there's anything I can do in the future, whether that be any questions, you know, because it's good to talk to somebody, you know, that's in the same position as you. I find that's good for all people with a spinal injury. So I'm delighted that you came on today, and we'll cross paths.
Hopefully it's in Cork. I don't like spending too much time down in Kerry.
I'll show you what hurling is down here in North Kerry, all right?
I'd say there's no hurlies down there now at all, but thanks very much, Ian, my urgent.
Thanks for being Adam, take care, all right?
See you, Mike. Thanks.
Now, folks, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show as much as I did, and I appreciate you tuning in to me as always every Wednesday night. A massive thanks to Adam for coming on tonight and having a chat about his own story, because it's not easy to chat about something so, I suppose, which is still very raw for him. He's only just going on 3 years after his injury, so I suppose it's still a bit raw for him. So I appreciate him opening up and having a chat about his own story, and hopefully it inspired a few of you listening. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, ianoconnell321, or drop me an email at my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.